Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. You know, it's an interesting place we find ourselves in as a country. Opinions are now used as weapons. Thoughts are used as a bludgeons against you. If you don't think the way, the approved way, you'll be canceled. Right? I've had a taste of that recently, and it's very uncomfortable. It's not nice. I don't like it. But you know what? I speak my voice, I speak honestly, and for anybody who's listened to this show for any period of time, you know where my heart lies. I believe we are all brothers and sisters, we are all Americans, and we need to find a way to get along. What the people that are looking at me and trying to cast aspersions towards me, and this show in particular, don't really understand the idea of people have lots of opinions, and just because you don't agree with someone's opinion doesn't mean that their opinion doesn't have any value, or their thoughts, or their questions about things. It means we should look at those things, we should be honest about those things, and where there's truth, we should highlight it. Where there's not, we should correct it. And that is what we do here on Chasing Justice. Isn't that really what justice is all about? So speaking of justice, I guess it's hard to get away from the recent situation with Kyle Rittenhouse. It's hard to move away from what has gone on with his trial. When you talk about truth and justice, it's amazing when you watch the different news channels and you see the different ways that the trial was portrayed, that the verdict was portrayed, and that all of the players involved, Kyle Rittenhouse, the prosecutor, his defense attorneys, the judge, everyone involved was portrayed in different ways that very clearly seems to be set up to meet certain narratives. Now, no matter what the narratives are in any given situation, the truth is what must prevail. So at its core, this was about a self-defense case. Now, as I've said on other earlier shows, was it wise to go to a riot armed and walk around the streets? I don't know if that's a wise thing to do. Was it a morally acceptable thing to do to go to protect your community? Or do you just sit back and let it burn and let it be destroyed? Because who's going to really step up? Well, the police didn't step up. The police and the local politicians didn't step up to protect businesses and people. And that is why, clearly now, the trial has shown, because the trial is a determination of fact, and the fact has come out now, that that is what Kyle Rittenhouse was doing out there, just what he said he was doing. He was rendering aid to people who needed first aid. He was cleaning up graffiti to protect his community. And he was also acting in a way to try and avoid destruction to his community. This is what the kid said he was doing out there. And the myriad of video proves what this kid was doing. You know, we saw, I don't know the writer's name, but she wrote an article. And she said, you know, here's the 10 lies that were told about what happened there. And this is shocking because they're trying to make it out that this kid was out there to attack people in a Black Lives Matter march. And that's not what he said at all. If you listen to him in the only interview I've seen him do since the trial is over, is that he spoke to Tucker Carlson, who's a reporter on Fox News. And he said, basically, I support the Black Lives Matter movement. I understand what they're trying to say. I wasn't out there to go against them. I was out there to protect my community, offer first aid, and do what I could as a citizen. And like I said, we can all argue with the sense of that, but if the police aren't going to be there, are you going to let your community burn down? Is that what you would do? hide yourself in your house and just let your community burn down, let all the properties around you, your businesses, everyone else's business be destroyed? Or would you take a stand against violence? It's one thing to protest. We all agree protest is good. That's part of who we are as people. We go out and we protest if we don't like something. But burning, looting, destroying, that's not protesting. That's been twisted into a version of what's called protesting, and it's not protesting, right? That's arson, destruction, theft. That's not protesting. Protesting is making your voice heard so that you can aggrieve a problem, so you can be upset and you can make your voice known to people who could maybe do something about it. So when we look at this, I was just really surprised because I like to spin between the dials and see what everybody has to say and listen to what's going on. And the way just the young man himself was portrayed, you know, so many of the lies that were told about him were debunked. Now, were they actual lies or was it more of a reality that people had beliefs about him and they just ran with those beliefs because it fit a narrative that they have in their head? And therefore, everything they see fits that narrative. You know, that's a reality. Some people do that. Self-fulfilling prophecies. You know what I mean? People do those kind of things. So did they think he was a white supremacist who was out there to attack Black Lives Matter people? Is that why he was? Well, if that's what you think going in, if that's what you're told on the news, if that's what your leaders in the country tell you, then it would make common sense that people would think that. I found it very interesting. My beloved Kathleen, who really tries to stay away from the news because she doesn't like the ugliness that goes on out in the news. She's off of Facebook. She doesn't like anything about Facebook because it's, you know, it's a lot of nonsense on there. So she stays off of social media. But she follows the news in conversations that we have when things come up. You know, we discuss them and see what's going on. And many days after the trial was over, the Rittenhouse trial was over, myself and my father-in-law, Ted. Hey, Ted, how are you? Because I know Ted listens every day. My father-in-law, Ted, were talking about the case. And Kathleen, because she didn't follow it in the news, she just followed it through our conversations as we're talking, and the little clips that she heard on the news that she did listen to, was that she thought the two men that got killed and the man that was shot, she thought they were all African Americans. And I said, why would you think that? She goes, well, that's what I heard on the news. You know, the little bit of news she did hear. She goes, that's what I thought had happened, that he was there at a Black Lives Matter rally and he was attacking African Americans. I said, no, everybody that he shot was a white guy and they were attacking him. Now, she understood the self-defense part of the whole thing. But the message that she got just from the culture was that the men who were shot and killed and the man who was injured were African Americans, because that is the model that has been put out there. People to this day still think that's what went on there, that that's who Rittenhouse shot, and that's not who he shot. You know, some of the things that I saw, and I think I saw Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh D'Souza was out there, and he wrote something. Let me see if I can find it. I made some notes here about what he had said. And it was interesting because it's the lies, or basically the story that everyone was told about what had happened here. And it was like that the kid, there's no reason for him to be in Kenosha. He crossed a state line illegally with a rifle so that he could go attack people. Well, the trial proved clearly that that was not true, that that was a lie, that his father lives in Kenosha and he has every right to be in Kenosha. He did not bring the rifle with him. The rifle was in Kenosha and he had every right legally to possess that weapon, even during a riot. Now, again, we can all say, is that something you would tell your kids to do? Is that something you would do? I don't know it is. You know, I don't know that I would tell my kids go out there and go to a riot with a gun. I don't know that I would do that. That wouldn't seem to make sense. But there's that other side. You know, did this young man feel morally obligated to protect his community? You can argue with him. You can say he's stupid. You could say he's wrong. You could say whatever he wants, whatever you want about him. But he had to make that decision And that's a decision he made, whether we would make that decision or not. It's a decision he made. That doesn't change the facts that he did not cross state lines with an illegal weapon and bring it there to attack people. And that's what we were told. The impression was made that he attacked African Americans, and he didn't. There was another thing out there, another one of Dinesh D'Souza's things he talked about was that he chased these people down and he shot them. And we now know from the multitude of videos and testimony by the victim, the one victim who's alive, was that that's not the case. He didn't chase them down. He was trying to get away from them. They were chasing him down to hurt him. Right? So that was a lie, that he was chasing them down. Now, why would there be so many lies? Where are our journalists to actually do investigations? You know, if you watch the trial, you would have to say, oh, now I know some facts. Facts I did not know before. Now I know some facts. That's pretty interesting. But to just go along, and then even after the trial, now, people didn't agree with the verdict. Okay, that's fair enough. I say that's fair enough. If people don't agree with the verdict, people could say, you shouldn't be able to shoot somebody to defend yourself. The prosecutor, this guy comes out and says to the effect of, hey, every once in a while, we have to take a beating. In life, you know, you get in situations where you take your beating. Really? You take your beating? Someone's going to beat you. Think about yourself. You're sitting in a restaurant and you're armed because you're legally allowed to be armed. And through the restaurant comes a group of crazy white supremacists. And they are attacking the restaurant you're in. And you're sitting there. And they're coming at you with a skateboard or a handgun or something else to hurt you and the people around you. Well, by that logic, you should just take your beating. You should take the smack in the head with the skateboard. And if you live through it, good for you. And if you don't, oh well. If you dare to defend yourself, they might point a gun at you, these crazy white supremacists, and shoot you. Even though you have a weapon, you shouldn't fire back. That's when you put it in a different context, it doesn't make any sense. We all, every single one of us, has a right to self-defense. Right? We can disagree with each other vehemently. We can disagree with each other's positions vehemently. But we don't have a right to hurt each other. We don't have a right to physically hurt each other. That's where it stops being protest. So when I saw the video of this, and then you saw some of the things that happened with the prosecution, I have to say I was, as someone who's been on the prosecution side for most of my career as a law enforcement officer, I have to say I was disappointed in some of the things that that prosecutor did. The fact that they had a better video that clearly showed what happened during the attack on Kyle Rittenhouse, and they gave the defense a poor copy of it. They kept the good one for themselves and didn't show anybody. That is a miscarriage of justice. Now, I understand when people say, well, that's what's been going on for a long time. The prosecution does that all the time to frame people. And if that's the case, that's not justice and that's wrong. Our prosecutors have to be clear and open and do the right thing. The men and women of our prosecutors' teams have to do the right thing, follow the law 100%. And so do the defense attorneys. We got to follow the law. We're all entitled to a trial. We're all entitled to be judged by our peers based on our actions. But we should be able to do it in a situation where it's fair and honest and open. And I didn't like some of the things the prosecutor did. When the prosecutor said, it was questioning why he did not speak when he was given his Miranda rights. And the judge got very upset because, you know what? This is not just Kyle Rittenhouse's rights. This is my rights and these are your rights. And the prosecutor's not supposed to bring that up because it makes you look bad, makes you look like you're hiding something. It's a trick. And it's not allowed in court because we're not there to trick. We're there to present the facts. And then a jury of our peers deciphers those facts based on the testimony, the evidence, and everything, and makes a determination. Is what this person did a violation of law? That is what is supposed to happen in a courtroom. And I was very disappointed in that. Now, when the witnesses went up there and you had the man who got shot in the arm who was pointing a handgun at Kyle, he said, yeah, I pointed the gun at him and that's when he shot me. Then there were other witnesses that said, I came running at him and I saw the gun and I backed off and he didn't shoot me. How do you not get a clear picture of what happened here? This kid was not rampaging through the street looking to shoot people. He was out there with the weapon in case it got dangerous, exactly what happened. Now imagine if he didn't have his gun. He didn't have that weapon with him. And he was doing the exact same things he was doing, trying to put out a dumpster fire that apparently, from what I've seen, it was going to be pushed towards a gas station. Well, that would cause a pretty big problem in a neighborhood, wouldn't it? Imagine if you live next door to the gas station. Would you want somebody protesting to throw a lit dumpster into the pumps? Even if that wasn't the case, even if it wasn't going to be thrown into the gas pumps, a lit dumpster being pushed up against buildings are going to start things on fire. What if that was your business? Would you say, well, that's worth it because people should protest and burn things down because they're angry? No, of course you wouldn't say that. Of course you wouldn't say a thing like that. This is where we're going off the rails. We're misinterpreting the genuine, legitimate right and responsibility to protest when we're not happy about things. We should stand up and say, this isn't right, whatever it is. But burning and destroying and stealing people's property and attacking people is not right. And anybody that can say it is, I can't agree with them. And I don't understand that kind of thinking. So when I flipped around the dial and I saw so many people saying, well, you know, I followed the trial and I saw all the evidence and it was pretty clear the kid was innocent. And then other people who saw the exact same thing say, no, he shouldn't have done it. He's a murderer. He's a white supremacist. How can you say he's a white supremacist? There was nothing brought up in here at all that said this kid is a white supremacist. Does he belong to what, to the Aryan nations? Does he go to their meetings? I don't know. Where would you even find these people? You know, where would you even, you look them up in the phone book? I don't know. How would you find a white supremacy group? You know, they're these militias. Where are they? Do they have a phone address? You call them, hi, militia? I don't know how you even find these people. I always pictured them like in Hill Country, you know, groups of these guys that get together. I don't know any of them. But that's what they said this kid was, with no proof. Why? Because it seems to have fit a narrative that they wanted to make it seem like this kid went there to attack a legitimate protest. And instead, that's not what happened. No matter what anyone thinks, I'll tell you right now, you do not have a right to attack someone because you don't like what they're saying. That's the essence of free speech. We could say what we want, even ugly things. We can not talk to that person. We cannot associate with that person, but we don't get to attack them. And by all the evidence in this case, it was crystal clear that that's what happened to this kid. And that is why the jury, who took their time, obviously they took their time, several days looking at that evidence, to go over the law and the evidence and the judge's charge to find this kid not guilty on all five counts. He didn't do anything wrong, not guilty of what you've been charged with. So he shot and killed two people. He was called a murderer. He was charged with murder. Well, the jury came back and said, not guilty, which means he is not guilty of murder. It was self-defense. Right? Self-defense. So that's been going on in our country now, and it's boiling and percolating. Then we have this guy who drives his car through the Christmas parade. Did you see those videos? Again, thank God we have all this video. Because could you imagine if we didn't have video, people could just twist any story the way they wanted. And if you say it enough, people will believe it. That was absolutely horrific. Five people died and over 40 people injured. This guy driving through a parade, a Christmas parade with little children there. Absolutely horrific. It's the crime in our country is getting out of control. Because while there may be a legitimate message in the idea of reforming our criminal justice system to make sure that it's fair, not to make up for things that happened in the past. We can't do that. What we can do is ensure going forward, everything is correct and fair, right? If there's room for reform, then we should reform. That's what evolving is. We learn something new, we adapt, we change, and we go forward. But how can anybody look at what that guy did and drive that car through a parade? I saw the video. He went through barricades. Do you drive a car? Do you ride a bike? Do you walk? When you see barricades, what do they mean? They mean just blocked off. Don't go here. When you see people with trumpets and tubas and drums and little children getting candy in the street and there's barricades, that tells you don't go there. Well, this guy went there anyway at a high rate of speed with that car and he ran people over. What is going on with our country? The crime is getting out of control. Why do we have these situations where it gets worse and worse? And was he released? Apparently, several days earlier, he attacked his girlfriend with a car. And because we're trying to do the right thing and reform our criminal justice system so that it's a better system, that it's more fair, because we're trying to do that, we've gone so far the other way that we're not holding people accountable. They're not being held account for their actions. And when you have people that commit crime, I've been in the business for 30 years, when you see people that commit crime, there are career criminals out there. That's how they live. They commit crime over and over and over. It's part of their lifestyle. That's why we have career criminals. You know, it's unbelievable that this guy was let out and now five people are dead. What's going on? New York City is dangerous. Chicago is dangerous. These major cities are all dangerous now. How come? Why aren't we, as a nation, as a family of people, all of us, saying, you know, let's figure out what's wrong and fix it. Not let's kill each other, bash each other, drive over each other, destroy each other. What are we doing? What point does it make to destroy people? Physically, career-wise, emotionally, what does it do us as a people? How does it make us better if we do that? It doesn't. It just makes things worse. It builds up. And you know what I've heard from some people when I've made comments like this? People say, that's the way it goes. Now it's your turn. Now you're going to see how it feels. We're going to do it to you. Well, let's break that down. If things were done improperly and wrong, without justice, and people are sick of it, you can understand that. I wouldn't want an injustice done to me, would you? I wouldn't. And you could see where people get to the point where they've had enough of it. But then our system changes. It recognizes these things and it says, you know what? You were right and we're going to move forward. Well, no, we're not just going to move forward. Now we want a pound of flesh from you. Now you're going to suffer what we suffered. Well, what do you think that's going to happen in the long run? Now you're going to turn around and punish people who may or may not have had anything to do with it whatsoever. They just happened to be alive in the country at the time. They are now going to have to suffer. What do you think they're going to be thinking? They're going to be thinking they want their pound of flesh. Oh, really? You did this to me? Now I'm going to get back at you. And do you see that's how the cycle of violence continues? And the cycle of violence is dangerous for everyone. You know, this is where, in this recent situation where it feels like I'm being attacked, and all I'm trying to say is ask the questions. Why don't we just ask everybody's questions, not just one person's question, and no other questions are valid. In America, everybody's question is valid and deserves a fair look. Let's look at it. Let's talk about it. Not give it short shrift and debunk it just because we don't like it. Actually talk about it. Actually dissect people's concerns. I have said that forever. And if you're listening in, like I know you people are out there, you know that's what I've said all along, is that we need to look and understand what it is people are saying. What are they upset about? And then determine, is it real or is it not real? Is it perception or is it truth? If there's truth, then we should serve justice and change things. And we do. If it's not true, we should be clear about that as well. Which is where the stories about this Kyle Rittenhouse, when we see the trial and the evidence and the facts that come out, and it does not match what we have been told. It does not match the storyline, the narrative that we have been given. That is not justice. If that kid went to Kenosha with the purpose of shooting down people because he didn't like them, and that's why he went there to do that, then I would say he should have been found guilty. Because that is a homicidal rage. That's a crazy person. That's a dangerous person. But the evidence proved he did not do that. He did exactly what you are permitted to do if someone attacks you. You don't have to sit there and take your beating, as the prosecutor admonished us. Right? Those crazy white supremacists come running into that restaurant where you're eating with your family, and they want to shoot you, beat you, hit you in the head with something. You do not have to take it. You're allowed to protect yourself and your family and to fight back. These are codified laws in our nation, and they've been here forever, because that is a basic right of human beings to protect themselves. Now, you don't like who's protecting themselves. Well, that's another story. That's something for you to think about. But everyone has the right to protect themselves. So I really wanted to cover that base today, because this is what's in the news, and I don't even know what to say about this this guy running through the Christmas parade in Wisconsin. So many ugly things have been said by that. There was a woman, she had something to do with the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. She came out and basically said that the blood of those people, and I'm paraphrasing here, the blood of those victims are on everybody's hands who voted for Kyle Rittenhouse to be not guilty, even the children. Can you imagine saying such a thing? That those little kids in a Christmas parade deserve to be hit by a car and run over because a jury followed the facts in a criminal case? Does that make sense to you? Is that what you're sitting there going, oh, nope, I think that's righteous, that's righteous. Well, if you think that's righteous, you got a problem. There's something wrong with you if you think that. If a jury goes against what you believe, that's hard to take. It's very hard to take because you have some kind of an investment in it. Maybe you were the victim. Maybe you thought you were the victim. Maybe somebody you know was a victim. And maybe the case did not go your way. And that's hurtful. That's painful. I've seen it happen to victims when criminals are found not guilty for whatever reason. The state couldn't prove its case. You know, the state couldn't prove its case, and that's the burden, right? We, the people, we are the ones that have our rights. The government has to prove things against us, and if you don't prove it, you get away with it, some cases, right? Other cases, getting away with it, what's that mean? Well, you did something bad and you got away with it, that's good, we should applaud that? No, but that's how the system works. What do they say? Better that 20 guilty people go free than one innocent person go to jail. Well, when we see the trial with Kyle Rittenhouse, this kid apparently did what every one of us is allowed to do. They lied about him. They told stories about his actions. And he's allowed to defend himself. And it was tried to be turned around against him and put him in prison for the rest of his life. Is that justice? Because you didn't like what he was doing there? Doesn't matter. When we have rights, we have rights. And if we don't stand up for each other's rights, then none of us will have any rights. Do you understand that? That is what is shocking about this situation. That is what's shocking about this situation. So we all have to consider that. We're in the season now of gratitude and life and love. We're moving into that season. I mean, the tragedy of the Christmas parade should really set a tone for all of us to say, have we gone too far now with this vitriol, this anger at each other, this do anything to win points, to destroy people, to make your case so you're the winner in the argument, instead of being truthful and finding a way to figure this out so that we can live normal lives again? That people in our cities, in every neighborhood in our cities, can have their children play without getting shot? That people can go to work without getting robbed and killed? That is what is before us. That's the question that's in front of us. We have to answer that question, because this, as I have said many times, is not sustainable. This is dangerous. All these talking heads want to talk about the danger to democracy, the danger to freedom. This is a danger to freedom and to our way of life. So think about that, because that's what I call you to think. Ask the questions, and let's have a conversation about it. We'll be back in a minute. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com. HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
While the cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets, America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Come inside, come inside. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice. Like I said, we're in the season here of gratitude and thankfulness and love and light as we prepare to move into a new year, a new day. Are we actually going to do that? Every year there's an opportunity. You know, what do they do for New Year's? Everybody has resolutions, right? You have a resolution for the new year. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to be a better person. I'm going to get a better job. And then they say the average resolution lasts until about February 3rd. And then people bail out of their resolutions. We have a lot of choices to make. We have lots of choices to make and decisions to make how we're going to do this going forward. But I want to take a few minutes to think about gratefulness and thankfulness. And it's something that, I guess if it's in the front of your mind, it should be. Be grateful for the things you have around you, for the people, the family, the friends. You know, I guess if you're having a tough time in life, it's not so easy to be grateful because, you know, you don't feel there's a lot to be grateful for. I can understand that. I've been down to the bottom of the pile and I've been higher up on the pile. And I understand it's much easier when you're higher up on the pile. Now, that getting up on higher up on the pile has taken a lot of hard work and a lot of time. But I understand being down at the bottom and just making it. But you know what? I think if we view gratitude and thankfulness for only because of things, material things, money, then it's easy to be upset and not be thankful. But you know, I was at a service the other day for my Uncle John passed away recently. He was in his mid late 80s, and my Aunt Ellie, she passed away about 2 years ago, 3 years ago. She was in her mid 80s also. Very, very good and decent people from New Jersey. They moved to West Virginia. And they built a retirement home there, and really a beautiful place. But they had both just passed away in the last couple of years, and we had a memorial service. And the priest that gave the memorial service mass for them, was really wonderful. When he came out and he talked about, you know, gratefulness and thankfulness, if you look around and you say to yourself, what am I thankful for? What am I really grateful for? And again, I understand if you don't have a lot of things, it's hard to be up and into that. But the reality is we all have life. We all have life. We were given life. And It was interesting because one of the things that has always intrigued me throughout most of my young life and my adult life was the concept of space, outer space, the galaxy, the universe, right? Now, let me connect this all together to what the priest said, what the father said. I've always seen a connection between the universe, understanding it, and God, a loving God that brought us here. Now, some people don't believe that. It's okay. You don't have to believe in a loving God. You can believe that we are chance, that this is a chance operation. Life just happened to come together and create everything that you see out there. You know, it's funny. If we found a microbe, a tiny little microbe alive on Mars, it would rock the world. But in the meantime, go look out in your backyard. You know, look at the trees, the bushes, the flowers, the grass. Now go look down in the grass. Look in the dirt. Look at the bugs, the insects. Look at the birds flying up. Look at all the life that we have on this planet. And again, anywhere else in the universe, if we found a single microbe alive, it would be ground-shattering news. We wouldn't know what to do about it. But we have all of this right here in front of us. So for me, the universe has always been a touch tone that there's answers in understanding that universe. Now, I don't mean the movement of the planets and all that. That's all physics. That's all physics based on the things that are in the universe, the objects, the chemicals, the rocks, the planets, the stars, all that. All that is determined by physics, how they move. I'm talking about beyond that. How did they come into being? Well, there's really two arguments, and we've had that on this show before. I wouldn't say arguments, two theories. One, this stuff was just always here, and then life evolved over time from just random chemicals coming together, and then suddenly life sparked, and then here we are. Well, if it's that simple, let's ask this question. If it's that simple for life to just spark up and happen, how come it only happened here? We know that the chemicals that are present here and the elements that are present here are present all over the universe. How come life hasn't sparked up all over the place? Even maybe one more place. But when we look at the numbers of galaxies alone, they say there's 100 billion galaxies. We can't even comprehend that number. The number 100 billion anything, we can't really comprehend. But if we look at it as we're one galaxy, the Milky Way, is one galaxy of 100 billion galaxies. And in our own galaxy here in the Milky Way, there are 100 to 200 billion stars. And each star can have a couple of planets. So there could be billions of planets in our own our own galaxy. Shouldn't life have sprung up at least one other place? Because the chemicals are everywhere. All it took was time and the mix of the chemicals. Shouldn't we be everywhere? And I don't mean humans, I mean life. Shouldn't life be everywhere? Let alone the 100 billion other galaxies that are out there. Right? But that's okay. So this is what intrigued me early on when I started thinking about this. You know, the size of the universe started to weigh on me, where I could start to think about the size of the universe. And I don't think I can really comprehend in a totality how large the universe is. But I get an idea of it. I get the concept. And the more the concept seeps into my head and expands, you start to realize how big this universe is. So my question always, from the time I was little, I remember asking myself this question. If the universe is that big, if it takes up that much space, where did it come from? Where does it go? How far does the endless universe go? And how can that possibly exist? So throughout my life, I've had, you know, conversations with people. And, you know, you sit around when you're young. You know, what about life, man? Where'd life come from? And you kind of take it for granted. And I promise I'm going to bring this all back to what the priest said. Is that as you contemplate these ideas of taking into account people who say there is no God, it was just random. Okay, let's go with that for a minute. There is no God. There is no supreme being that created us, brought life into the universe. It's just a... Where did the physical chemicals and rocks and material come from? Where'd those things come from? They couldn't just happen on their own. Where did the physical space... Now, you know the universe is expanding. You know, they show now that the universe is expanding and it's getting faster and faster. It's expanding faster and faster. To the point that some scientists are saying now that at some distant point in the future, 20, 30 billion years from now, it'll have expanded so big, all the stars that are here will have burned out and the universe will go dark and quiet and cold. And that'll be it. But that space will still be here. What is that space? That's the essence of the question for me. And my friends who are atheists, and I have some friends who are atheists, and I respect their opinion that they don't see God. They don't. Where is he? It's a story. It's a book. Man, big man with a white beard in the world, in the sky, and he's the... No. But I think when we think about the expanse of the universe... And the fact that it does exist, it's real. This helped me to come closer to what I think my understanding is of why I personally think there is a God. Because I don't see things just coming into being. Things don't just materialize. They come from something. Everything comes from something. We have such a limited way of thinking, I think, with our brain power, that we can't comprehend the universe. And when I listen to people who have a scientific background and who are not, you know, God-centered, what they say is, well, the universe always was, and the chemicals got together, and life started, and here we go. And the Big Bang is true. There was so much compressed stuff that it exploded. We've seen this over and over. Stars compressed, right? The gravity pulls them in so tight, they supernova and explode, and okay. That seems to be a process of the universe. I get that. But that doesn't answer the question when I say to them, well, where'd this stuff come from? I either get one of two answers. Well, it was just always here. Or they say, I don't know. But it's certainly not a supreme being who created it. It was just here. Nothing just appears. It doesn't happen. So let me move forward now in my story and try and tie this together here. So I'm at this service for my Uncle John and my Aunt Elle, who were really, really wonderful people. And the priest is talking about understanding the afterlife. You know, we're sad when someone dies, when someone passes away, especially at this holiday time of year. You know, we think about our loved ones who have passed before us. And we're sad that they're not with us. And that physical separation from them is very painful. You know, I lost my mom and my dad, and I miss them all the time, especially at the holidays. You know, I wish they could have seen my grandchildren. You know, all that kind of stuff. At least my mother saw, you know, she saw all four kids. She did. She saw Jack when he was really little. But, you know, my father never saw his grandchildren. So anyway, I understand. And I'm very sad at the holidays sometimes. You know, you learn to live with it. You're a grown adult and you put it in its place and you understand that people passing is a part of living. You know, death is a part of life. And I look at this and the priest is trying to give comfort to all of us there by saying, you know, the beauty of religion is that it gives us some answers that we can't seem to find an answer to. Even our scientists, they cannot answer that question. Where did the space that the universe inhabits come from? And where did all the stuff in the universe come from? Just saying, well, it's always been here, that's not the answer. You got to go further than that. It's always been. It had to come from somewhere. What was in its place before it got here? Right, you see, the picture just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you start thinking, we don't have answers. We can't comprehend this kind of stuff, and even our science can't. So if you can't come up with an answer that's provable, that you can point to, then you don't have scientific proof. That's how I understand it. You know, you have a theory, you do an experiment to prove it, someone else does the same experiment using your facts, and it's repeated over and over, now you have scientific proof. Well, we have no scientific proof. How the universe got here. It could have been always here and just happened, but because we can't prove that there wasn't a supreme being, a god, then we can't say that that wasn't it either. That's certainly one of the possibilities. Now, when you start to line up the facts about things, you start to line up the stories, the traditions, and look at things about religion, you see where, okay, there are a lot of stories. Sure, there's stories. The Bible's got stories in it. But at least they're giving you some explanations that you can look at. And if you attach yourself to there is a supreme being, suddenly all of those stories make perfect sense. Right? So I'm not preaching at you here. I'm trying to think through it. Okay? So the priest is trying to give us comfort by telling us that if we believe in religion, and in this case, Christians, you believe in Jesus Christ, that he was sent from God to come to earth, to die for all of us, to destroy sin, to destroy death, so that we can go and live with God in the infinite future forever. If you believe that, you have to look at what Jesus represents, and he represents the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. That's the whole idea of God. So he was here before all time, and he'll be here after. And we almost, I would think, a lot of people are comfortable with the concept of heaven and afterlife. We might not completely understand it, but I think a lot of people have heard about it their whole lives. When you die, you go to heaven. When you die, you go to heaven. When you die, you go to heaven. Right? Or you go to hell if you're bad. Okay? And we look at those things, and if you're a person of religion, and just about any religion that you can name has an afterlife, when we look at that, we're more comfortable with that concept because we've heard it our whole life. And if you have a faith, exactly what it means to have faith is that you believe that there must be something after this. Well, here's how I'm connecting the three things together, the before, the now, and the after. This is what was coming to me as the priest was making this statement, because he brought up the universe and the complexity of the universe and the size of the universe and the never-ending timeline of the universe. If we believe and we're open to the concept of life after death, then that makes it very, very clear that there had to be something before life. And I mean our lives, individually. This is how I'm seeing it. Which is where that opens up the creation of the universe, the establishment of the universe, how it got here, what space it takes up, where the stuff came from. You know, I always look at life and then I look at afterlife, but we don't always look back behind that. And the reality is, let's think for a minute about just the simple fact that we exist. This is the part that I think gets lost on people. We take for granted that we're alive and that we have family members and we have bodies and we have jobs and we have houses. All of it seems perfectly normal, doesn't it? It's perfectly normal. We're alive, we have kids, we go to great adventure, we have holidays, we go to church, we don't go to church, we believe, we don't believe, we have cocktails, we do whatever we do. Isn't that kind of strange that we're here at all? What is all of this that we're here, that we can sit and think about this, that I can sit and talk about this on a show and you can sit there and listen to it and you can think about it? Where did all of this come from? It's bizarre that we're even here. And if it's bizarre that we're even here, that makes being here more beautiful, more spiritual, but it unlocks both other sides of life. If you can comprehend that it's impossible for us to be here, but we are, we just get lost in the minutiae of everyday life, don't we? Got to get a job, got to go to school. It just seems perfectly normal. That's what we're supposed to do. What we miss is the majesty and the magic and the awe of the fact that we're even here at all. How are we here? We live on a rock that's floating through the emptiness of space. How is that possible? See what I'm saying? So if you accept that we're here, and it's, we can't describe how it happened, but we are. Go beyond the normal, the ordinariness of that we get used to of life, and look at the awe-inspiring reality of life and how we create life every day, right? People have children every day. The animal kingdom has children every day. All of the things on earth recreate life constantly, right? Well, if we accept that this is really special and hard to comprehend, then is it really that hard to comprehend the before, that somebody set this all up, and the afterlife that we could go to? It's not that hard for me. That priest opened that doorway for me in my thinking to connect the before to the after, which I never had really considered before. But it's this in the middle, this time in the middle that we're alive, that our hearts are beating, that we're functioning, we're talking to each other. This is so unique and so special, but we easily lose track of it because it just seems normal. It's when we sit back and think about it. Apparently, there's nothing else in this giant universe but us, which is belies the theory that everything just came together and made life. Because if that was happened, we should see it, okay, maybe not in our solar system, but in the next one over, in the next one over, in on one of the billions of planets in our own galaxy. But in the universe? The universe should be teeming with life. It was just accidental, right? But I don't know. So that's my thoughts there, and that leads me to being very grateful and thankful that that priest was there to talk about that, that he was there to give comfort to me and to my family and to my cousins who lost their mom and dad, and to open that door for me. And that's the time of year we're at. We're at that time of year to reflect, to think back and look at all the hardship we have in our lives today, the fact that we can't get along with each other, right? We used to not get along, disagree. We weren't killing each other. We weren't hating each other. This is not sustainable, and that's not the time for it. This is a time for to be thankful. And when I look at that and that majesty of life, I am so grateful that I'm here to even think about it. What is the possibility that I'd be here, that any of us would be here to think about this? Do you see how special this life really is? And that's why it's important for us to find a way to get along, because we only have a little bit of time here. You know, I was looking at, they say the average age of a male, life expectancy in America, which is, you know, one of the highest in the world, is 74 years. Times 365 days. How many is that? Let's see, 74 times 365. That is 27,010 days. That's it. 27,010 days is your lifetime. Now, if you're very lucky and you live to be 80, all right, 80 times 365, that's 29,200 days. So if you get to live to be a very old person, you're talking 30,000 days. That's it. How many days in your life have slipped by already? You know, from one day to the next and one day to the next. Do we appreciate each and every day? Because you only get 30,000 of them if you're very lucky. And then you're done. You're done here. Your time is over. You move on to whatever that moving on is. You know, a while ago I told you a story. My partner Chuck, who's a very, very good man, him and I were talking about the world and our kids growing up and doing religious rituals for them and communions and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And he says to me, he goes, I don't really think there's anything after this, man. I think you die, you go in a hole and you rot. And I think that's it. We're here and that's it. You're done. And I said, okay, well, you know, I respect my friend. I respect him. I think he's a smart guy, and I'm thinking about it. I'm trying to give it some thought, you know, because that's what I do here. I ask questions, right? Right. And I'm saying to myself, well, maybe he is right. Maybe there is nothing after this. Maybe when your heart stops, your brain stops functioning, you cease to exist. I find that hard to believe. I find it hard to believe that all the love that you have felt in your life, all the thrills you felt, the joy of bringing children into the world, the joy of that first love, the thrill of seeing the stars for the first time, seeing the beauty of the ocean, all of these things that are part of our lives, these wonderful views of things, that we just die and all of us that was in there goes away. You just disappear like you never existed. I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I feel further connected to the universe because I was here and maybe because I appreciate those things. That it feels like we can't just end, right? There's a before. We know there's a now. We just covered that in detail. And we believe there's an after. Well, if there's a now, I think there has to be a before and an after. That's just the way I see it. That's just the way I see it. But you only get 30,000 days. And how many days have we all wasted, right? How many days have we wasted being angry with other people? How many times have we missed out on family members and friends and people who could be friends because we were angry, we were upset, we had, I don't know. It just seems not the right thing to do. And now I look at the season of Thanksgiving and I say, I am very grateful for life. I'm very grateful for the fact that I'm here. I'm grateful that I found my wife, that we found each other. And from that came my children, and now my grandchildren. And I am part of the cycle of life. I am very, very grateful for that. Because no matter what, we were here. Now, our time happened to be this time. But we are part of a never-ending cycle of life. And what's going to happen down the road, I don't know. I can't tell you. That's for you to decide. But I believe there's something more. I think there was something before. We obviously know there's now, and I think there is something to come. And I'm very, very grateful to a loving God that would let me be a part of it, that would let me come here and love my wife, love my children, love my parents, love my grandparents, and think back of all the people that came before them, the people I don't know. And you know, right now, I see the beauty of my grandchildren. Now, if I'm blessed with those 30,000 days, I might see my great-grandchild, like Ted, right? My father-in-law, Ted, he's been blessed to see his great-grandchildren. But we all know that by the time those kids grow up, the great-great-grandchildren, you probably won't see them. And then they move on three generations later, and they won't even know any of us. We will just be, you know, names in a book, maybe, or a memory. Because I go back, how far do you go back? I know Ted goes back generations. He knows his family going back, you know, going back multiple people into the 1700s. But who was here in the 1500s? They're still all relatives, right? We don't know any of them. So a few generations down the road, are they even going to know us? I don't know, but we were here. We're connected directly to them through the beauty of life, right? Me and my wife, we made our children. Our children married and made children, but we're still all part of that. I am part of all the descendants that came before me. And all the people that come after me will be connected to me. We're all connected that way in life. And that is where I see God. I see God in that connection. I see God on a beautiful day. I see God in the interaction of the animals in the world. I see God in the excitement of holding somebody's hand that you love. I see God in the face of my children. We can see God everywhere. So for my friends out there that say, I don't ever seen God, I've never seen this guy in the cloud in the sky, look around you. When you laugh, when you smile, when you feel love, when you see a beautiful sunset, there is the face of God. And for that, I am very, very thankful. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice. You know what? Be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem.